Welcome back. It's 1244, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times, and I'm joined once again by Washington Times political editor Stephen Dinan. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
All right, got a whole bunch of things to talk to you about today. First of all, the headline, Constitutional Conundrum, definitely got my attention. Michigan demand for a balanced budget could trigger amendment convention. Now, I've heard about this in the past, and this actually could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. They would be the 34th state, meaning a two-thirds majority, right?
That's exactly right. Now, there are a lot of questions about that number 34 and how you reach that number. But yeah, as you know, I'm obsessed with these sort of weird constitutional quirks and whatnot, and this is one of the great ones. It's part of the original Constitution. In Article 5 of the Constitution, which deals with how the Constitution's amended, it creates two different ways for amendments to be proposed to the states. The way that we've known, and all 27 amendments that have been done so far have been done by Congress, two-thirds of each House of Congress voting to propose an amendment, which both houses vote in a two-thirds majority to do that. It gets sent to the states, which ratify it. And there are two different methods of ratifying. One is the state legislatures ratify. The other is you can actually call individual ratifying conventions. All of those have been done before. The thing that's new here that could happen for the first time ever is that in case Congress doesn't look like it's really moving towards something, the Constitution gives state legislatures their own way of proposing amendments, and that is if the legislatures in two-thirds of the states vote to call a convention on a subject, then the Constitution says Congress shall, and the word is very important, shall issue the call for a new convention to consider whatever the states ask to be considered. This is essentially sort of similar to what actually happened back in, I guess it would have been 1786, when the first convention call came out, what produced the Constitutional Convention. And so, yeah, we're talking about an untested, never tried, completely legitimate way of amending or proposing amendments to the Constitution. And in this case, Michigan last week passed its convention call. State legislature approved its convention call, and it's on the balanced budget amendment specifically. By some counts, that would be the 34th state to call for a convention on a balanced budget amendment. The problem with that is that 12 of those states have, after passing a convention call, have later gone back and rescinded that call,
okay.
And that's unclear. This is all untried. There are a lot of questions here, and one big one is, well, can you actually rescind the call, or once you've made the call, is it good and valid regardless of what you come and do later? That's an unanswered question. There are a lot of experts who say that there are precedents out there from, you know, lower conventions and whatnot that would suggest that you can rescind the call, but the Supreme Court's never dealt with that, and Congress has never dealt with that, and in the end, those two authorities, Congress would be the first wave judgment, and then presumably it could be litigated in the court. So,
yeah.
Really complex.
This sounds like something that's headed for the courtroom down the road and probably not in our lifetime.
Yeah, no, and I think that's true. You know, there's a reason it's never been successfully done, but one outcome of this is that it oftentimes does push Congress to act. Now, Congress tried just a few years ago to propose a balanced budget amendment on its own. In the 1990s, it came within one vote. It cleared the House and came within one vote in the Senate of being officially proposed to the states. And there was actually I believe it was a Republican senator who had previously voted for the balanced budget amendment who switched his vote at the last moment and blocked that. Congress tried again 2 years ago, and it fell way short after a number of Democrats who had voted for it back in the 1990s switched their votes, including some major Democratic leaders in the House. So it's a really controversial thing. What would be interesting to see is whether, if enough states do go down this path, does Congress suddenly revisit that and say, whoa, we need to control this. We can't let the states push us around. We need to at least do something to get on top of this issue.
Yeah, that's really a very interesting story. All right, I want to move on to something else. New Mexico's immigrant ruling to bolster gun rights cases. Now, legal immigrants have the same gun rights afforded to American citizens. Is that what I hear?
That's what a federal district judge, actually the chief judge in New Mexico, ruled yesterday. And that's, you know, it's an interesting case. This issue used to split gun rights groups. Back a few years ago, when gun rights groups were dealing with this in a South Dakota case, you actually had some gun rights groups that said, yes, legal immigrants should have the same rights as American citizens here. You had others, though, who said, no, this is a special right. It's a very particular right for Americans. Legal immigrants don't necessarily deserve all the same rights as American citizens. So it's not just a gun ruling here. It's an interesting immigration ruling you've gotten. Both those are at play. On the gun issue in particular, New Mexico allows its residents, its citizens, legal American citizens, to have concealed carry permits, but it had denied that right to legal immigrants, the green card holders essentially, even though both were allowed to own guns. They were allowed to possess and own guns and have them in their homes. The question was, were they allowed to carry them outside with concealed carry permits? And the court ruled, well, there's no reason to treat legal immigrants differently. First of all, on its face, it's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. Second of all, is that there's no difference in safety. There's no evidence that this shows they're more dangerous with them. So the judge struck it down on both counts there.
And again, this is legal immigrants, not illegal immigrants. And I guess you chalk one up for the Second Amendment crowd then.
They certainly do. And, you know, they said, it's not necessarily a giant ruling. The judge did not rule on this issue that we still are waiting for the Supreme Court to deal with, which is the Supreme Court has ruled that gun ownership, the Second Amendment, protects a person's right to own a firearm. What we don't know is whether the Supreme Court believes that that right to own a firearm extends to carrying it outside of your home, essentially, which is a big issue in concealed carry permits and whatnot. The Supreme Court's been silent on that, and the judge didn't rule on that in this case, but what she did rule on is exactly that, that immigration status, legal versus citizen status, shouldn't make a difference for gun ownership. As you said, this does not affect illegal immigrants. They are banned by federal law from concealed carry, from even possessing or purchasing a firearm. So they are still prohibited.
All right. ATF allowed officials salary double dip. I got to be honest with you, I didn't know a whole lot about this, or at least I had forgotten. The former ATF official who approved the gun running operation Fast and Furious was actually pulling down two salaries for a while?
Yep. Yeah, this was, I guess it would have been 2012, and it's one of these things that, you know, after seeing Bradley Beal and the CIA claiming to be a CIA agent and hundreds of thousands of dollars from the EPA, around the same time that that was unraveling, there was a guy over at ATF, a very high-ranking official, and the guy who had been one of the key approvers of Fast and Furious, who basically wanted to retire, go into the private sector to J.P. Morgan, but decided that he would take his leave at the same time so he would be collecting a federal salary at the same time that he was working for J.P. Morgan. And this went on for more than 2 months. His supervisors approved it, even though it was completely against ATF rules and created a conflict of interest because of how high-ranking he was at ATF and the things he was doing there and the things that J.P. Morgan wanted him to do for them was clearly a conflict of interest, according to the inspector general who looked into this. So it's one of these things where you really wonder what the folks were thinking when they said, yeah, go ahead and use leave. I mean, presumably he could have just cashed out that leave, at least a bunch of it, and not had both titles. So it seems like, and this is speculation, but it seems like he must have specifically been going for some sort of conflict of interest, the benefit out of that. Otherwise, you don't know why there'd be a benefit to staying around.
That's very interesting. And this guy's name is William McMahon?
That's right. And, you know, we should hear more about this tomorrow. The new director of ATF, Todd Jones, will be testifying on, I assume a Fast and Furious will come up, but the chief reason he's coming up to Congress to testify is on these storefront gun sting operations that we've talked about in the past couple weeks or so. So he'll be up to Congress to actually have to defend ATF on a whole bunch of management issues. And it's worth knowing, I call him new because he has been newly confirmed in the last, I guess, 6 months or so as ATF director, but he had been acting director for 2 or 3 years before that. So all of this stuff happened on his watch, and so a lot of stuff to answer for.
Mm-hmm. All right, Cesar Chavez resolution blocked by GOP again?
Yeah. 8 years in a row, according to Democrats, who are beginning to get angry over this. But this is a really interesting one. This year, it wasn't just a blockade. They didn't just object to bringing it to the floor. They actually, the Republicans tried to amend it. They tried to add in language. And Chavez, if you go back and look at his history, you know, he was a very forceful advocate for farm workers. Today, we sort of assume farm workers are, about half of them are illegal immigrants. But back then, Chavez was fighting against illegal immigration on the grounds that it took jobs away from Americans who wanted to do that farm work, who it lowered their wages. Businesses were using illegal immigrants to undercut legal American workers' farm wages. Democrats don't really want to talk about that side of things because, of course, they view Cesar Chavez as a hero of Hispanic Americans and therefore of the immigrant rights movement. And that's definitely, he was one of the most stern advocates for strict enforcement and, in fact, led marches to the border and would actually station people sort of symbolically along the border, sort of like the Minutemen you remember from a few years ago on the conservative side. He would station people along the border in a protest to say, don't come across illegal immigrants. You're hurting our work. Democrats did not want that to be part of the resolution, so they prevented that from getting added in, so Republicans blocked the whole resolution. So a really interesting fight there.
Yeah. All right, and finally today, another one bites the dust. Dave Camp retiring, huh?
Yeah, so he was another guy who was term limited. He's been the top of the Ways and Means Committee, very, very, very powerful committee, for 6 years. And so he was going to probably have to give up that gavel. It was unlikely he was going to get a waiver to extend his time there. Under House Republican rules, they only allow their chairman to stay around for 6 years. And so, you know, without another big committee to take charge of, this sort of made sense. But it's also in some ways a bit of an admission that he wasn't going to get very far. He'd worked for, you know, the last 3 years on a big tax overhaul. We've heard about this. It was something that President Obama said they might be able to work with the Congress on, get rid of all these loopholes and flatten the tax code a little bit. And this year, it's his own House Republicans who have said, nope, we don't have the appetite for that. We're going to stay focused on Obamacare. And so faced with that, he's decided to call it quits. And it's a loss to folks like John Boehner. He was a big ally of Boehner's. And I'd actually thought if he'd stuck around, might conceivably try and run for Speaker of the House if Boehner had stepped down. But obviously, that won't happen.
Wow. Very good. Thank you for your help on all of the stories. We'll do it again.
My pleasure, Andy.
Stephen Dynan, Washington Times political editor, 1255 at 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.